Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condor with Kate, and joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Arrington.
And today we have a guest with us, a certain Monsieur... Do you want to tell your name?
Or... Oh, sorry. That's a good start. Jay Slayton Jocelyn.
It's good because I think I said your surname out loud once last week, and I think I'm... mush-mouthed it, so I'm glad that you were able to...
Yeah, no, I imagine you changed the whole intro just to avoid that British awkwardness.
Exactly, yeah. So Jay has just had a tasty little book out, a horror movie-related book, so he thought it'd be good to get him on the show. Do you want to tell us a bit about the book, Jay?
Yeah, funnily enough, I happen to have a copy just nearby. Don't know how that got there.
That's lucky.
Yeah, it's called Sequel Land, A Story of Dreams and Screams, and it's essays about creating and interviews with directors who have pretty much only done direct-to-DVD horror sequels. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of cool that one of the people we get to discuss today is in it, albeit very briefly. And yeah, it's about 4 years' worth of work, or over a space of 4 years condensed, and now it's out there in the world, and people seem to be responding well to it, which is really nice.
It's a very cool book. I read it, and I read it, and it was I found it a lot more. You think like it's just going to be like a standard essay interview book, but there was more to it. There is a nice framing device to it, which I got a lot out of. So I'd recommend everyone to go and check it out.
Thank you very much.
Ben, have we got any horror news for today?
So I spotted a couple of things. One thing that you tweeted out, actually.
What?
That's right. So apparently there's a new film adaptation of Clive Barker's Books of Blood coming to Hulu this Halloween season. Now, when you tweeted it, you kind of seemed quite shocked by the information, as if you hadn't heard a whiff of it.
I think I'd heard a whiff. I think I'd smelled a whiff.
What's that
a while
there?
Back.
What's that on the wind? It's a whiff, I hear.
But I think I didn't expect it to be so soon. And it's not what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be a TV show, but it's a film that sounds like it's going to have three of the stories.
Yeah. A feature film anthology arriving in October and part of Hulu's Huluween celebration, which sounds just sounds wonderful. Just sounds too good to be true. So written by Brannon Braga and Adam Simon, based on a short story by Barker with contributing original material. Books of Blood takes a journey into uncharted and forbidden territory through three tales tangled in space and time.
So I hope it's not just the wraparound. You know, the guy with the stories tattooed on, or like engraved into his skin.
Yeah.
I hope it has actually got some of the stories that we haven't had adaptations for already. Although I'd like to see a really good Rawhead Rex, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Seth MacFarlane is apparently on board to executive produce, which is a bit out, which is a bit random.
But I mean...
I think it's because Brannon Braga did the Orville, which is that sort of
space
Star Trek-y type thing, which I've not seen.
Yeah.
So obviously that's why he's on board for that. But yeah, could be fun. Jay, are you a Clive Barker fan?
Do you know what? I've actually never read any of his stuff. I guess the only thing I know him for is directing Hellraiser. I know it's probably a bit sacrilegious to say in front of you guys, but I've always meant to, but I'm not sure. It just always seems a bit difficult to get a hold of a copy, but he seems a really interesting guy, so I do need to go through it.
Yeah. Luke has been kind of predicting a Clive Barker resurgence for probably about 2 years. And, you know, I reckon he's onto something because I can see it happen. Obviously, Hellraiser is coming to, was it HBO? Hellraiser is coming to
Hulu.
TV show. Was it Hulu as well? Maybe Hulu.
Oh, no, sorry. Maybe that's what you thought you said. Because I know they've been, like, clawing onto the Hellraiser rights for a while, haven't they? Like, making direct-to-DVD films and just clawing onto them. Not even getting, like, Doug Bradley anymore.
Yeah.
There was one released a couple of years ago, which I didn't watch, but I heard was total.
Well, there's the Candyman reboot, which is looking tasty so far. There's the Hellraiser, not just a sequel for sequel's sake, but looks like it's going to be a better. There's going to be effort put into it, and then there's this. As Clive Barker has got a new book coming out next. Couple of years, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I know he's got a book.
Next Sunday.
So it feels like there's a bit of resurgence. I mean, he's been ill for the past few years, I think. So it would be nice to have him back.
There was a photo of him at a signing, wasn't there, where he looked quite.
Didn't look well. It's a lot older than I think people think. He was like 35, 40 when he wrote the Books of Blood and that came out. And he looks like about 20 in those.
Yeah.
In that period, but I mean, I think he's done a, you know, it's like Carl Pilkington talks about like Asian people, like they age like pears. I think Clive Barker has aged like a pear. Like he's gone he's aged a lot in such a short space of time. But I love the guy. I do.
What a great guy. Okay, some other news. A couple of headlines now regarding apparent new Evil Dead movie. Don't know if you heard much about this. Apparently, it has got a title now, so it's going to be called Evil Dead Rise.
No, I thought they changed it. Or did they change it from that to something else?
I think originally it was Evil Dead Now.
Okay, yeah.
And then somehow it got changed to Evil Dead Rise. So Bruce Campbell says, the official name is Evil Dead Rise. We're getting a new draft in. I don't think anything will happen to 2021. A whole new ball game, no more Cabin in the Woods. And then there's another headline, which is a rumor, which says Evil Dead Rise will take place in a skyscraper.
Oh, like a high rise.
Wow.
Wow.
Is this like Evil Dead 4, or is this a sequel to the reboot? Or
I think it's Evil Dead 4, I believe. Cool.
Because Bruce Campbell was so adamant he'd never do it again, wasn't he?
Yeah. Is this just going to be Evil Dead's version of Gremlins 2, where they just go, right, let's just take all the action to a high rise and see what can happen? Loads of crazy stuff.
I can imagine it'll work.
So that could be pretty interesting. Apart from that, news is pretty thin on the ground here. Although I did read up about Jason Blum from Blumhouse has said, there's a Five Nights at Freddy's movie which is moving forward rapidly. Anybody played that game? Anybody would like to see a movie?
I played the first one. I think it was just like a really base. How is there more than one game? Are they different mechanics? Have you played them, Jay?
I haven't. I've seen Let's Plays. I think they're pretty much all the same mechanic, most of them.
Okay.
With a few minor differences, and they kind of establish this whole story in it, but you know, I guess they'll just make a movie out of it because people will see it. It's quite a cool story.
Yeah.
The director linked to take up the direct to be the director is Christopher Columbus of Home Alone.
Wow.
What, the guy who directed Home Alone, the first one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
30 years later, he's like, yeah, why not make a horror movie? There we go. So I think there's a script. And moving forward, but obviously Blumhouse just are churning out so many different projects.
Yeah.
That, I don't know. They don't. It doesn't feel so special anymore now that we hear about a new one, does it?
Yeah. Well, I think they've always been churning them out. Didn't we read that they'd got like 114 films out of it? But most of them just got under the radar.
Yeah. Very strange. Okay, there we go. That's pretty much all I've got for horror news, unless anyone else has seen anything this week. It's been pretty thin on the ground, to be fair.
No, nothing.
What have you guys been watching or reading or consuming?
I read, I feel like I've been going on this about this a lot recently. I've just finished a non-fiction book, Masters of Doom.
Okay, I did hear you say that. Yeah,
and so it's kind of about id Software, the company that made the original Doom and stuff, and kind of rising in that kind of computer age starting. And for some reason, it was so well written, it was kind of really thrilling. You've ever seen like Halt and Catch Fire or Mad Men or something like that? It's one of those kind of tension agency things about how, and just kind of provides a lot of context, like how Microsoft was struggling and Bill Gates appeared in this. That's now emerged online where he's like edited into a Doom game and kills a zombie of a shotgun. So that's been the thing that I've been enjoying the most. And other than that, just watching Succession.
Okay. Yeah. The Peep Show guys.
Yeah. So, yeah. That was pretty much why I watched it.
Yeah.
But that's it. Nothing scary.
That sounds good. What about you, Ben?
So I've mostly been filling my time with The Last of Us 2, Part 2.
I've already seen two spoilers on the homepage of YouTube. Just there.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Because I've been posting like a few screenshots here and there, but I've tried to keep them as vague as possible so that they don't lean into plot points or anything like that. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm really enjoying it. It's much, much longer than I expected. There's been a couple of times where I kind of feel like maybe it's going to wind down and then it just doesn't. So a much, much bigger game than the first one. But yeah, I've seen a lot of people complaining about the story, and I don't know what else it could be. Really, it's the same level of the same bleak nature as the first installment, and it's just more of the same. Really, if you enjoy the mechanics of the first game and you enjoy the story and just the way everything progresses, and the human characters as well, then it's great. I love it, and I'm glad I've still got a lot of it to play. So very exciting.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people complaining about it. I'm not too sure why.
No.
Is it mainly story-based, do you think?
I think it's mainly story-based, yeah. Okay. But it's one of those massive production games where like they've got to do something that's going to be, you know, I guess controversial or going to be a talking point. And yeah.
Can we not get specific, please?
We're not going to get specific.
Okay,
not
good. I just wanted to double check. I was nervous.
No. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that to you guys. But yeah, definitely recommend it. If you like the first game, definitely, definitely pick this up. Because the first game, I probably played about 5 or 6 times. And, you know, I feel like this is going to have replay value even more so. Okay. Just because of the size of it. And everything looks amazing as well. You know, there's like the photo mode in the game where you just stop for 4 or 5 minutes each time taking photos.
Rolling through the poses. Yeah.
All through the poses. Yeah, filters. It's good. I won't say anything else.
I mean, I'm definitely going to play it. I'm just, it's just a bit expensive. I can't really do the full price launch game price. And it's basically just on that itch.io bundle. I've got like 1,500 games. if I don't at least do 4 more of those, I'll feel like not very frugal if I just go and spend money on a new game.
Exactly.
I watched I've been carrying with my Sion Sono watch-a-thon, whatever you want to call it. And on Netflix there's a film and a TV show called Forest of Love. So Sion Sono, he's sort of the modern day Takashi Miike, I guess. The bad boy of Japanese cinema. And Forest of Love is The film's 2.5 hours long. The TV show is about 8 hours. I kind of feel like you could probably just get everything you need to from the film. But there's a lot to it, and it gets incredibly gruesome. It's basically about a guy. How's I supposed to explain it? So It's about a young crew of wannabe filmmakers who want to make a film about this guy who they think is a serial killer. He's this guy who is extremely charming. He's able to sort of make people do whatever he wants them to do. And he makes them do crazier and crazier stuff. I won't spoil or go into it any more than that. But it's definitely worth watching. But like I said, it's pretty insane. It's pretty, pretty insane.
Sounds interesting.
That is interesting, yeah. anything else, Jay? Have you watched anything else this week? Or is that kind of
No, that's kind of been it. Other than that, I've been rewatched the Dark Knight trilogy, of course, I'm really kind of struggling to engage with new things at the moment, I think, just kind of like lockdown anxiety or something. I don't know. I just either need to play games or, just rewatch things to unwind. So I'm really struggling to get new stuff in.
Yeah, I think I agree. I've been watching a lot of things that are kind of like comfort food versions of films. So I watched both the original Ghostbusters movies just because, there's always a good time to watch those films. And I realize it's been a number of years since I've actually sat down and watched them. So very enjoyable. And I also watched The Lost Boys because Joel Schumacher passed away this week, didn't he? And I just realized that I haven't seen The Lost Boys in a long, long time. And it's like the epitome of an 80s movie, isn't it? It's just a good time. It's got everyone, like everyone's in it. All the Coreys, the Feldman, the Haim, Kiefer Sutherland. And it's just a good film. And one thing I noticed, right, and I don't know if you guys ever noticed this, but if you remember when the Twilight movies came out, one of the things that was really, really disagreed upon by the horror community was, of course, the fact that Edward Cullen glittered when he was in the sunlight. Now, I don't know if you remember this, but there's a certain scene in The Lost Boys where they're asleep and they get attacked by Corey Feldman and, and his other sidekick dude, and they get covered in this like sort of gooey stuff, which I think is some sort of secretion from the vampires, or at least the secretion from where the vampires are. And when they actually leave the cave, they're glittery. And I don't know if you guys knew what that was supposed to be.
I barely remember the film, to be honest.
I don't think I've seen it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I don't know what you're talking about at all.
It's basically what the point I'm trying to make is, for everybody who says vampires don't glitter, I want to just call back to The Lost Boys and say, look, they obviously did, even in 1987. So get Luke off Twilight's back, will you?
Luke warned me to spend a few hours defending the Twilight movies on the podcast.
Yeah.
To be fair, my daughter who's 10 has just been engaging with the Twilight films for the first time, and I've not really been watching them or enjoying them at all. But they're not that old, but they have aged terribly. Yeah. Everything just looks awful, and everything is so cheesy, and not a good way.
Yeah,
at least Robert Pattinson's like redeeming himself a lot with all the films he chooses.
Oh yeah, now. It's strange because I think Robert Pattinson and Kristen Stewart are probably two actors that if I see them in anything, I'm willing to watch it.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're a selling point for a movie now. So.
Who else is from the Twilight series? Are there any other actors of note?
I think.
Taylor Lautner, I guess.
Oh, yeah, of course, but he's kind of gone down there.
Yeah, I think that's maybe as famous as they get, really.
What's her name? The redhead from Jurassic World.
Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah, Bryce Dallas Howard. I don't know why I forgot that. She turns up in one of the later sequels as like a recast character or something.
And
Anna Kendrick is also in it. To the point where I was like, oh. Oh, wait, and Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
I didn't think I'd be talking about Twilight on this podcast, but there we go.
I think of
some people love it.
And other than that, obviously the Pet Sematary movies, which we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll start. With number one, as is probably the correct way to go. Have you got any details about Pet Sematary 1? Ben.
So Pet Sematary is a 1989 American supernatural horror film and the first adaptation of Stephen King's 1983 novel of the same name, directed by Mary Lambert and written by Stephen King. It stars Dale Midkiff, Denise Crosby, Blaise Burdell, and Miko Hughes as Gage Creed, and quick synopsis. After tragedy strikes, a grieving father discovers an ancient burial ground behind his home with the power to raise the dead.
Cool. So it's got 51% on Rotten Tomatoes, 3.2 on Letterboxd. I kind of thought it might have a bit of a higher score, generally. On Rotten Tomatoes, anyway, 51% seems a little mean, maybe. And Jay, you interviewed the director. How did that work? I mean, I know it's a short part of the book, but
It's like a blink and you'll miss it. To be honest, originally, so I was speaking to one of the other people, the person who did Carrie 2, Kat Shea.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Oh, I know Mary. If you want to interview her." So I sent her this long list of, she was like, "Yep, sure." And sent her this long list of questions. And then when she just responded with one answer, and then I asked for clarification, like on the rest, she just said, "Nope, that's it. Enjoy." And I was like, "Cool." And then, so when I like sent it in to my editors and stuff, they were like, "Oh, is the file corrupted? Is there more of this?" And I was like, "No, but at least we can say we got her." Yeah. Trick the people. But yeah, so honestly, all of the interviews, most of them were just firing random emails and tweets at people. But she kind of really just, I don't know, I think it's odd that you'd kind of take part but not do it that much.
Maybe she was busy. Maybe she finished that first one. How many questions are you sending to people?
Maybe like just only like 10 to begin with, unless they're
she
real talkers.
She did that first one and she was Jesus. Got 9 months to go.
Jesus.
This guy.
She was just about to go to bed as well. And she was like, which question did she answer?
She said, "I'm never doing a number two again after Pet Cemetery 2.
Yeah, I tried to get her really involved in the third one. I just basically asked her like what she thought about sequels. And so she kind of disregarded every question about her own films. So maybe she's going to listen today and then regret that decision.
Regular listener. Yeah. Mary Lambert, very answer questions from now on.
Well, I mean, Pet Sematary 1, so what can we say about Pet Sematary 1 about the tone? I mean, it's, I think we all probably grew up, I remember watching it, both of them, really young. And both of them left some sort of impression on me. Do you remember the first time you watched it?
I don't remember the first time I watched it, but I remember just coming away from it just remembering the creepy kid, and that was pretty much it. I think when I saw it, I didn't know it was a Stephen King book until I became a Stephen King fan like in my teens, and I don't think I'd seen the sequel before like last week. I'd heard of the sequel, but for some reason just always managed to avoid it somehow, because I had absolutely no idea that Edward Furlong was in it, and obviously the great Clancy Brown as well. So when I started watching it, I was very, very excited.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how old I was when I watched it. And the only way I can try and guess is I was old enough that I wasn't like scared by it, but I was young enough that by mistake, the title's still how I spell cemetery sometimes.
Yeah.
True.
I just remember being quite freaked out by the second one. I think it came on like a family gathering. I grew up around a lot of motorbikes, and my dad used to race motocross bikes and stuff. And there's something about that scene with a kid in his face that I never really forgot. It's always kind of stuck with me. I think the first one is, we're probably not going to go too much into the plot of it because we did Pet Sematary, the remake, fairly recently. And Ben, how did we score that remake? I can't really remember. I think I watched it for that episode as well.
Okay. Well, how did we score the remake? Did you mean?
We weren't
very happy with it, no. And I think the reception to it was also pretty negative. I think looking back on some of the tweets I did about it as well, it does seem I wasn't best pleased.
It's raging.
Did you see it, Jay?
No, I kind of meant to, because it was, I don't know about you guys, but I saw it marketed a lot, like on bus posters and stuff like that. And it's kind of, I guess, maybe riding that Stephen King wave. But no, I never got around to it. And then a few people who I did said it wasn't great. And then I was kind of, wasn't in a rush.
I think the marketing was really good. And the trailer was great as well. Like the trailer was really, really effective. But yeah, it just kind of didn't deliver on anything I wanted it to. And there's like a finale as well, which kind of just takes it in a really, what I felt was a ridiculous direction anyway, for a film which feels like it's got a solid enough plot. They kind of took one of the key elements,
yeah,
and they just reversed the fact that the undead child was the older girl in the remake instead of the younger boy.
Oh,
that was kind of it, and it kind of felt like, okay, well, we've already seen this done, you know, scary girl of about 10. But yeah, do you remember much about it, Luke, or not? Do you remember much about it, Luke? And
I mean, really? I remember being a bit angry because I don't think you can make that plot change without kind of unspooling the rest of the thematic, sort of deeper themes of the film. Especially because I remember just being a bit sort of disappointed with that. But I remember there were some cool scares. Skip, who came to see the film with us, but I jumped out of his pants when there's the woman who falls down the dumbwaiter thing. But it had some moments.
Well, that's the thing as well. Like, there's a really key, scary, creepy element of this film is the sister who's dying from meningitis. Is it meningitis? Something like that. Spinal meningitis, I believe. That's like a key, scary part of it. And in the remake, they kind of just, you know, it felt very paint by numbers in terms of the scares it was going for. Right, okay. So here, this is my tweet about the remake. It just says, a bang average modern horror remake. Film tries to be clever by changing key plot points, but ends up so far off the mark, it's infuriating. That was it. That was all I said.
Because I was quite surprised when Luke read the Rotten Tomatoes stuff, because I think the first one's not too shabby at all. Like, I think it holds up quite well, especially considering it's the same person who did the second one.
Yeah. So 51%. Yeah, it should be higher than that. I mean, there's some cheesier elements. It also has that kind of like Hallmark TV washed out dream look that a lot of films seem to have at that point in time. But it's good. It's scary. It's got tons of great moments. The Judd character is great. The kid who comes back to life is pretty epic, I think. There's like, cause the way he can kind of cut, he's like, what? I don't know, children. 10, is he? How old is he? He's between 2 and 10, I think. And he's able to sort of jump between like a genuine kid moment, like when he's being put down and he just says like, ouch, or something like that. Like, it's really genuine. And also he sort of be scary when he's biting the throat attitude.
He gets properly knocked over at one point, and I was like, God, is he all right? And like, gets slung against the door, doesn't he? Smashes his head. He's like, ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great. And I had to see, you ever do that when there's like a kid in a movie and you go, what do they look like now? What do they look like now?
What's it like now?
Yeah, completely different. So looks the same. He's got a little scalpel on his hand as well all the time.
Yeah.
Exactly the same, but bigger. Yeah, head twice the size. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
This movie like really does include the jogger who dies, that Victor guy who like is half his brain hanging out. He's obviously really key to the movie, key to both characters. Is it Lewis and Rachel, the Creeds?
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yes, he's seen by them in different places and at different times, although I feel like Rachel doesn't quite see him. He's almost like a guidance,
she can smell him,
figure,
she can smell,
sniff
him, about
him, yeah, yeah. Like, bloody hell, someone stinks, someone's wearing Lynx Africa. He's like,
yeah, it's weird because I mean, in the book there's like little moments. Stephen King's, his sort of best talent is introducing like uncanny moments that are kind of really quite subtle but sort of terrifying the more you think about them. There's the bit where Lewis has a dream about walking into the Pet Sematary with the cyclist, and then he wakes up and his feet are dirty. In the book, that's really subtle. But in the film, like, his feet are, like, caked in mud, and it just doesn't seem to pull off the same sort of effect. Like, it almost seems, like, stupid.
Like he's been doing cartwheels outside. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty mad that this like ancient burial site is there, because it's absolutely massive, isn't it? And it's kind of just like, oh, just climb over there a bit and then walk for like 10 years. It's basically like a Fellowship of the Ring to get there. It just seems to take so long.
And also, there's no one like stop these kids walking around carrying their dead pets all the time. You just think, kind of, if I saw a little boy holding his dog down the road, I'd be a bit panicked.
Yeah. What? I mean,
who's there to police that, though? Is it Judge Job? Judge Job. Is it your job, Judd? He's not doing a very good job because there's undead animals running around this whole neighborhood. And he's like, oh, I'm only one man. I've got to have a nap.
Judge Judy. He's a good character.
Oh, I love his accent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clancy Brown does a good job of trying to do a similar thing in the sequel. I mean, I wouldn't even know how to do an impression of it. Like, it's too far removed from normal human beings speak.
And when I saw the casting of the remake that you guys covered, I thought the actor who played him was like quite a good replacement, considering.
Yeah.
John Lithgow.
Yeah. I saw that was quite good casting, but I don't know how it worked out.
The original guy is Herman Munster, isn't he?
Sounds familiar. I remember it like it's not an old person's name. not many young Hermans about these days.
Herman Munster from The Munsters. So the guy who plays Judd in the original, Fred Gwynn, is Herman Munster from The Munsters. You know, like the guy looks like Frankenstein.
Yeah. he has the face for it.
That's definitely fake.
He's Lithgow went with a much more round-headed approach to his role, to his life, I think. But he makes it work. I mean, I guess, so we're not going to go too much of the plot, but we sort of know how it ends, right? So the kid comes back to life. Kills.
Can we talk about how the kid dies as well, just for a second?
It's still brutal.
It's proper brutal how the kid dies, but at the same time, funeral is a shit show. Like, I was literally, the whole time of the funeral, I was like, oh my God, Jesus Christ.
No,
you got the dad basically belittling Lewis for letting the little boy die. They knock the coffin off of its table. and you see the little baby hand like move. It's brutal. How did he get so close to the road without anyone noticing? Just
why are they having a picnic, like two steps away from the road?
Yeah, it's a big garden as well. He could have just played in the back garden and stayed there rather than running next to the motorway.
Yeah, just put up a fence.
Lessons learned. I suppose.
I reckon if they should have just not let them use the pet cemetery and go, no, this is for actual people who deserve it, you're obviously just neglectful.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have been a good horror film, but I think it would have been a good lesson.
Yeah. There's a lot of times in films when it's like maybe it's two people who just really don't get on. And I kind of feel like if they just said sorry to each other, they'd be fine. But then I kind of feel like, oh, but there wouldn't be a film.
So
it ends with Gage coming back to life. He kills Judd. He works quite heavily on the ankle. He's like a wrestler. Like, he knows this is an old guy. If he focuses on the ankle for a bit, he's gonna crumble. And then he goes straight for the jugular. The jugular.
Didn't even need to apply that.
And then he annihilates the mother.
How did he hang her? She gets like hung from the rafters in the
Because he's
the
not
attic,
like
right?
He's not just the reincarnation. He's not Gage come back to life, is he? He's like an evil presence that's sort of in that body, right? So maybe he's able to, you know, power up or something, get some supernatural strength.
Because he doesn't seem that strong. Because as I said, he gets discarded at one point, just gets booted and hits the wall.
He's got that Chucky strength where like he can be really strong for some reason in certain instances, but you can boot him across the field.
Like an ant who can lift like however many times its body weight, but you know, it'd crush it if it needs to.
Yeah. Well, yes, and then the dad gets back, and this is why I feel like the remake kind of lost the plot literally, because the dad gets back, he has to put Gage down again, like he gives him some dead making juice, whatever you call that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the kids cry. He puts him back to sleep, and then he doesn't learn his lesson. The whole thing is that he never learns the lesson, and he brings back his wife, and then she comes back, and then we don't know what happens. But
that's kind of like, I like that as an ending, as like that the open ending where like, okay, what's going to happen next? Oh wow, it's still going on. The film hasn't essentially ended. But what the remake does is it goes, right, we're going to carry that on to a ridiculous notion that everyone in this family is essentially going to be undead. So there we go.
Takes away
the mystery.
We normally rate the films, Jay. Mm-hmm. I kind of know what kind of rating I would give Pet Sematary 1. Do you have a...
Do you do pluses and minuses as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd probably go maybe B minus. I think it's far from perfect, but it's different. And when it's good at things, it's especially good.
Yeah.
That's the critic review.
It's good at doing the things it does well, but not so much the things it doesn't.
Yeah.
What about you, Ben?
Yeah. I think I'd go for something similar to that. I might go for a straight down the middle B, because I think with the hindsight of having seen the remake as well, like it really does make me appreciate what this film does right. It's great. I like it. It's an iconic film, I think. It's got a lot of iconic moments. A lot of moments where you kind of the Stephen King, the translation from the story, the Stephen King story into the film is great. So yeah.
Cool. I was gonna give a B minus as well. It is a great film. It is kind of dated in some ways. It's not perfect, but it is a great Friday night movie, I think. And then following on from that, Pet Sematary 2, which came out 4 years later. Have you got some info on that one, Ben?
Yes, I do. So Pet Sematary 2 is a 1992 American horror film directed by Mary Lambert again. Screenplay was written by Richard Outten, and it's a sequel to the film Pet Sematary, which is based on Stephen King's novel. Film stars Edward Furlong, Anthony Edwards, Clancy Brown, and a teenage boy and his father move to his recently deceased mother's hometown, where they encountered a Native American cemetery with the power to raise the dead. Confusing, because on Wikipedia, it's Pet Sematary 2, T-W-O. On IMDb, it's Pet Sematary II. And on Letterboxd is Pet Sematary number 2. We need some consistency, guys, across the board. That's playing havoc.
The scores aren't kind on this one. 22% on Rotten Tomatoes, 2.4 on Letterboxd. It's I think there's a good movie here with some like thoughtful editing and way better music. I think I messaged both of you instantly. It was like, this film would be good if they didn't. There's like every time there's a scary thing happening, you know, like a game that would have like a secret agent level and it goes dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
It plays that music. I mean, this isn't horror movie music. What the fuck is this? I just couldn't get around the music.
There's some really weird songs as well, aren't there? Like, I couldn't identify the artists like at any point.
Very 90s, yeah, some really 90s odd, sort of rock.
Yeah, grunge.
Yeah.
I feel very grungy.
I really couldn't believe it was kind of the same person who made the first one and how like the quality difference between them. I guess as well, maybe it shows, because I think the first one they advertised as Stephen King's Pet Sematary. And then this one, Stephen King said, you can't use my name on it. Yeah. So maybe he kind of realized that it wasn't up to par.
Lawnmower Man, I think this, he tried to get his name off of that as well, but I think they still advertise that as a Stephen King, even though that's completely nothing
zero
like the short story.
Same as the short story, yeah. I feel like maybe the first film was like Mary Lambert's adaptation of the story, and she was kind of held back away in a way by, you know, needing to make it as close to the book as she could. And with this one, she's gone, I'll take the basic premise and I'll make it exactly the kind of film I want to make, all right?
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if anyone can get her to respond to some questions about why, let me know, because I've tried.
It kind of feels like the first one is like a much more metered, well-paced sort of film. And this one, they were like, sequels have to be kind of crazier and
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
To sort of be a little not funkier, but you know, a little wilder. Gremlins compared to Gremlins 2. But I don't think it works. There's a few elements that work really well, but for the most part it's got some very dumb moments.
Yeah, I think you're spot on when you say it could have been a good film, but to me that makes it more frustrating that it wasn't.
Yeah.
I think Clancy was really great in it, kind of carried it a lot. Something that also bothered me while watching it, I felt like they kind of disregarded how the zombies kind of acted. They seemed a lot more self-aware and cracking jokes and stuff in the second one after the first one. And it was cool, and I guess it made a tense moment at the dinner table, but it just seemed a bit weird that one of the functions he can do when he comes back as a zombie is still manage to like have sex somehow.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah, did you feel like they were trying to make him a bit of a like a Freddy Krueger in terms of the jokiness of it? Yeah, it's weird.
It's almost like the zombies were helping some of the main characters as well. Some of the main characters you consider protagonists, they were sort of helping them, like saving them from bullies.
I actually quite like that moment. It's an interesting moment. I mean, I don't know if it works in the context of the whole lore.
I mean, talk about a bully for a second. This guy's a next level douche. Kidnapping a kitten. Kitten napping.
That's quite stressful for me.
I was not happy with that. Yeah. And he's got just like this scarf on.
Like a cross in his earring. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't understand why Edward Furlong's getting bullied by him. Surely it would be the other way around.
Yeah. But then also, I'm not sure if it works in a way, because then when you see him get murdered by a zombie, you're kind of rooting for the zombie because that child's such a little shit.
I don't know
like how much of it works in a sense of just to who is the real antagonist and stuff like that.
So the film opens with Edward Furlong's mother is, I mean, I couldn't remember a lot of this film, and it opens with like a gothic Stuart Gordon-esque sort of castle scene, and she's like running downstairs to, there's some creep in a, I don't know what's in this little cage, and I was like, I don't remember this at all, but then it turns out she's an actress, she's filming a scene, and then she tells the kid she loves her, and then she gets electrocuted to death, which is for ages, Like, it just doesn't stop.
But no one seems to react. It kind of starts happening, no one seems to react.
You're right. Yeah.
You're right. It was like Marv getting electrocuted in Home Alone 2. His hair on, standing on end, see a skeleton. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty tragic, right?
Yeah. I'm a bit confused. So, Eddie Furlong's character and his dad move into a hotel or something, and they open a vet's there.
Yeah.
Is it a hotel?
They go to it's basically his mother's hometown, and they move into the hack, don't they? So, his Edward Furlong's dad is like a veterinarian. That bloke from ER, his name's Chase. And we're kind of introduced to all the major players here at this point as well, aren't we? So, like the town sheriff, Gus Gilbert, his stepson, who gets terrorized constantly by Gus. They're like, it's pretty
Gus,
bad.
Gus feels like a Stephen King character.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like he's a really good example of the kind of thing that Stephen King would put in one of his books. It's a good addition.
Yeah, it felt very, I guess, like that kind of small, going back to a small town, presumably in Maine, felt very Stephen King. Like the location, everything was authentic. But I guess they already had it set up in the first film and story as well. But when they kind of derailed it later on the plot, that's when it felt really strange. But I also thought when the sheriff meets, in front of his stepson and the kid, he's like, "You used to bang your mum."
Yeah.
It's like the first thing he thinks.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That is very strange, yeah. We used to be sweethearts. It's like, too much information, mate. Jesus Christ. And when, I'll just keep calling it Edward Furlong, but his name's Jeff. When Jeff goes back to school as well, obviously like everyone's treating him as if, because he's the son of a celebrity, and obviously there was a tragedy as well, so he automatically gets unwanted attention, and obviously especially from the scarf earring 80s Doctor Who bully Clyde Parker.
Clyde Parker.
I recognize him. He's definitely like Tom Hanks's best mate in Big, right? Anyone recognize him?
Is that the actor's name, Clyde Parker?
No, that's the character's name. And I thought, is that a Clive Barker?
It's reference? Got to be, surely.
Clive Parker.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Got to be, yes. Must be. But yeah, so he's obviously just like a little shitbag. And yeah, why does Jeff take a kitten to school as well? Is he just...
That's such a bizarre thing to do.
Yeah.
For one thing, kittens...
You couldn't get away with that, could you?
You wouldn't just sit in your jacket all day. Surely,
Is that you? It's me. It's so, me. Yes,
I ate some punch.
So I think the bullies were like pretty savage. Like they did not pull punches. You can tell it's like a really vented adult who wrote the script. But I don't know, if you take a kitten to school, it's a bit, you are going to get something said, mate,
A little puffed kitten boy.
Kitten boy. Kitten boy.
Boy pussy. Yeah. Not the cat. Yeah. Stuff like that.
Boy pussy. Yeah. You answered. It was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
If you're going to take anything, you'd have a in your jacket, you want like a pit bull terrier in your pocket.
Yeah.
Pull that out.
That's what Clyde Parker says about that.
Why have they got cats again? Did they just like pick some kittens out of a litter?
Didn't I think his dad found one and it was pregnant or something?
Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, because his dad's a vet, and that's right.
We also get introduced to Zowie, who's like a husky mix, something like
that. Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful dog.
Yeah, really, really blue eyes. It instantly looks like you could use that for evil purposes at some point in the film. It's very sweet. The guy who picks the dad, he picks the dog up because it's got like bite marks on its nose or something. And he obviously isn't a vet. Like this dog doesn't look comfortable to be sort of shoved around like that. But he checks it. The dog seems okay. But he's got like rabbit. Gus collects rabbits, I guess. Is that right?
Yeah, he does. And he's randomly. Yeah, he does, because this is something I want to mention as well, because there's that scene where it starts and it's just panning the rabbits shagging, and then cuts to him watching, like glaring at them.
That's an interesting choice.
I don't even remember that. Yeah. Go, right, look,
at that point, there. Stephen King was right. Like, I only said my name after this.
Can't even say like the female gay, the male gaze, because who knows what they were thinking. But yeah, I remember that being odd. Maybe just to show how weird his character is. But yeah, he had loads of rabbits for no reason that was said why. So I think they like bit the dog on the nose when he was trying to get to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why later he sort of sets up a electric fence type thing that need to protect them from Zowie just tearing their arseholes off.
But yeah, I mean, he gets the dog tries to get in at night or something, and then just shoots him. Such a horrific move.
And he kind of says to Drew, like, I've warned you enough. It's kind of like he's trying to get busy with Drew's mum in.
Yeah.
And then the dog sort of starts barking. He's like, I'm interrupted during my time for the last time. And he just goes out and shoots the dog to death. Yeah. Not even like a warning shot or anything like that. Just like, I've killed it now. That's it.
Do you think he was actually kind of aiming a little bit off and accidentally shot the dog? And he went,
yeah, ooh. Oh, no.
Teaches you right.
I just don't understand the logic. Like, first it's a warning. Then you're grounded for a week.
Yeah.
Third time, I kill your dog.
Next time,
how does it get to that
next
point?
Time you take two steaks from the dinner table.
Yeah.
It'll be you. So the dog's dead. So obviously now we've got our impetus to take something to the pet cemetery. The little kid, I can't remember, what's the little kid's name? Not Edward Furlong.
Drew.
Drew.
Just? No.
Yeah, it's Drew. So Drew's the chubby kid, and then Jeff is the Terminator kid.
So Chubby and Terminator take Zowie to the pet cemetery. I mean, it looks like exactly like, is it? I think it's the same location.
It looks exactly the same. Yeah.
They even go past the Creed household at one point, and then they take the dog, bury it, and it comes back the next day, as we expect, but it's like bleeding like a ridiculous amount out of this hole in its back. And they take it to the vet, and the vet's like, yes, not looking great.
Is this a gunshot wound? It should definitely be dead, but it's not. This dog is pretty damn terrifying in its undead state. But there are loads of times where people are just coexisting with it in the same room, like trying to have a sleep, or the dog sat on a chair,
oozing.
Like, oozing, glaring, growling, and shush.
They put some effects on its face as well, some prosthetics to kind of like wrinkle it up, make it like demonize it a bit more.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Zowie is terrifying.
I mean they take the dog to Terminator's vet's dad's place to spend the night or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I think Drew says, can you keep Zowie at your place until he heals? Because obviously he wants to keep Zowie away from Gus, because obviously he's unhinged and could wring his neck at any point just for anything. Drew, you haven't tidied your room. That's it. Your dog's head's coming off. I didn't like that, did you? That's kind of happening. There's an undead dog milling about, and it's kind of terrorizing Chase as well, like the dad. Yeah. Like he's seeing it in his dreams. Obviously, we'll get to a certain dream in a moment.
Kills some kittens, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just kills some kittens as well, just turns them into mush. Can't find a heartbeat as well on Zowie. And Chase also sends a sample of Zowie's blood to a lab, and we get the classic. I say classic, but you know, it was kind of to be expected. Hey, is this some kind of joke? You sent me some dead blood. What are you talking about? What? Yeah. No, I didn't do that. Hey, it's just that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's all adding up for the audience. If you haven't seen Pet Sematary, it's all adding up for the audience, but it's not adding up for our main characters.
Yeah. I wonder who's watching this film and was like, what? Is dead blood? Oh, my God. Cinematic universe. Yes. Yeah. there's like a Halloween party or something, right? So all the kids, including the bullies, Terminator and Drew, go to the pet cemetery and have like a spooky stories moment. And that kid, the bully, is like telling a story. I mean, it's the most ludicrous kind of, I can't remember what he says now. It's just like, and then they don't know what happens. He's talking about the Creed family. He's talking about the mother and like how she lived, I think. They took her to a psychiatric ward. And then she's got out apparently last night, so she might be here.
There are quite a few callbacks to the original. Do you feel like they were kind of, did you feel like it kind of felt natural? Do you think they kind of felt shoved in? Because there's a lot of characters where they go, hey, the same thing happened to the Creeds down here.
I mean,
or, you know, obviously, just to remind people. Stories about the Creeds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like they feel good there? Do you feel like they feel natural? Do you feel like they feel a bit forced?
Yeah, they're mostly fine. I mean, maybe the thing with the dead blood is a step too far.
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously they terrorize Jeff as well, don't they? They've made like a version of his mum all dead. What was it?
A sex doll or something, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is it's horrible weird. And impressive. Like they go full on for their bullying.
Yeah. I love to see like when they were networking that idea. Yeah. Right, tonight. I know we've got the Halloween party tonight, right? And I know everyone's busy getting their costumes
ready.
You know
what really messes soul up?
Yeah. Is he even coming? Well, I think so. But we've got to do this.
Then the montage of them all working on it.
Yeah. What are you doing in there? Nothing. Stolen one of your mum's dresses again.
At the party is when Gus arrives, Billy,
yeah,
party pooper, and he punches, what's his name? Drew, punches him in the face or something.
Yeah, gives him a sweet jab straight in the schnoz, right? So he basically breaks up the party, attacks Drew, and then is he going to hit him with something else? I think he's going to like
hit him with like clobber a cross him with something. Yeah. It looks like it.
He does it. He takes it too far, doesn't he? He's like, there's no stopping point. He doesn't know when to stop. He's like, right, been badly behaved of you. Well, I'm going to murder you and see how you like that.
Yeah. But you're right. I mean, Zowie jumps in to save the day. I think it's kind of happened a couple of times.
Yeah.
I mean, are they saving the day or do they just want more undead?
It's weird though because the undead in the first film seem to just attack everybody essentially.
Yeah,
they don't try to like fit in with normal life at any stage, but for some reason in this film they kind of go about their business like the dog, even though it's obviously undead. The dog kind of like is all right for a while,
even the
chilling
cat
out.
Church in the first one is, although he kind of acts like a cat, he's like a mentally deformed like a.
Yeah,
there's something not right. I mean, I know the dog is like that as well, but the cat keeps attacking everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. Mostly. Yeah.
That's why I didn't get about it.
Mostly a nuisance.
Yeah.
What happens after that? So then they obviously... So they take Gus to the cemetery as well. I think just leave it, innit? Just leave him.
Also, I doubt that they could carry his body up the up to the pet cemetery. There's a bit in the first one where Lewis Creed even, climbs up to the top of the thing and then kind of pratfalls all the way back down. Do you remember that?
he does
a roll all the way back down. I don't know. But they manage it. And I think he just cuts to a day or two later. And then Gus just comes home.
He just comes home, yeah. Just like, doesn't... Drew's mum, like, say she was worried about him or something. You've been out all night or something. Or does he come back that night? I can't remember.
Yeah, that's current, but to be honest, don't
know. Yeah, I'm not sure.
So he's nonchalant. Like, yeah. So what's weird is obviously he's undead, but he kind of treats Drew with a bit more respect. Now he's not sort of out and out just horrible to him and threatening to kill him and kill his pets. But yeah, he's a bit stiff and a bit odd, I guess. But his sadistic nature kind of comes out over time rather than immediately.
Yeah, it turns into a bit of like a Weekend at Bernie's thing, like wrapping the scarf around his great gaping neck and stuff like that. That's when it all just changed a lot in the tone for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's suitably like ridiculous, but I kind of feel like it where it knows it is. It's not like trying to be a different kind of movie. It is being a completely ridiculous version of this story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it being that kind of more ludicrous. I mean, it's kind of works to some extent, but it seems to just trip up a few too many times, especially in the sort of the latter half of the film, and especially the end. Like, it gets ludicrous to the point where I just can't take it seriously. I mean, what point does Thingy dream of having sex with a wolf wife?
I think around about this time, like going alongside Gus coming back from the dead, is Chase is going through his own bit of bother, which is the dog basically terrorizing him at home, like attacking him and doing various other things. Kills the cats, I think, around about now in his veterinary, and obviously a mother and her two daughters see all the cat mush,
yeah,
and scream as you would.
Yeah. Well, how are you going to fix them? Vets.
Oh, no!
Get the mush down a pet cemetery, mush it all back together. It's a nice cat shape, and then it'll be good as new. So he is just having a dream, isn't he, of having sex with
his wife.
His wife who's dead.
With a wolf face. And then it turned out the wolf...
Imagine showing your mum that acting job after it's done. Yeah. I always told you I'd break into films, Mum. Look how I've
done. Yeah.
Is that a real dog? Is that a real wolf lady?
Yeah, I made sure it wasn't. It was in my contract.
Yeah. Then it turned out to be the dog. It's Zowie. He's like, which, I mean, I guess leads to even more questions.
Probably awkward between those two the next day, though. You've seen it. Just you could have cut the tension in that house with a knife. couldn't say a word to each other.
But he gets bit. Zowie bites him on the arm or something.
Yeah. That's right. I think they have dinner like with Gus. Like Jeff and Drew have dinner with Gus, and he's like grabbing rabbits and like ripping their skins off.
Yeah.
Who wants rabbit tonight?
It looks kind of real, that bit, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And isn't there also like a scene around that time where there's just Clancy's character kind of seems very unconsensually has sex with the mum?
Yeah. There's definite undead sexual assault happening.
Yeah. Just like the next day, she's kind of happily making that rabbit dinner. Just, I don't know. It's just never discussed again. It's weird.
Yeah. And he's like doing that seafood. Do you like seafood joke? But the mum's like, oh, Gus.
You. doing all the mashed potatoes in his mouth and burping and stuff. And it's just like, okay. Guess we're just ignoring that. But yeah, I think with the actor, the comedy works there, but it just feels a bit strange, especially knowing the ending that comes after.
Yeah. So this film didn't do very well critically. But his performance, Clancy Brown's performance, was nominated for a Chainsaw, Fangoria Chainsaw Award for supporting actor, and he got some nice feedback on it. And I think he's the best point of the film, I think. He's
100%.
The most interesting part of it anyway.
Definitely. Definitely, I agree with that.
I think it's around now that Jess cycling home and he gets attacked by the bully. He's on a motorbike, drives him off the road. And then he has his bike turned upside down. And I think I've probably all did this as kids. I think you kind of spin the wheels and then you stick sticks in there and it kind of like snaps them off or something. Do you ever put your fingers in the spokes? I think feel like that's something that we did. Maybe we did.
How many fingers do you have now, Luke?
Enough. If he's gonna do, he said he's gonna stick fingers snoz in there. He's like, you don't want to be snozless. No. He's like, no, I don't.
Why does this guy terrorize Jeff so much? Because I don't get it. And maybe that's the point, you know? That's the point. Why do kids terrorize other kids anyway? Yeah, but
kids are cruel.
He proper seems all over him all the time, doesn't he? He's like, oh, come here, Dad. Come here!
Yeah, I mean...
Kids are bastards.
Kids If you learn anything from the first one, kids are bastards.
Kids are bastards, yeah.
Yeah. And then we get another moment of like a heroic zombie with Gus showing up. And I kind of feel this is brutal. Like he gets the kid's motorbike and does the exact same thing. He kind of shoves the kid's face into the back wheel. His scarf gets tangled up in the spokes.
That bloody scarf. That scarf would be the undoing of him.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw him wearing it, I was like, that scarf is going to be key.
I don't know about you guys. It reminded me, did you do like wood tech at school?
Yeah.
I remember my teacher saying, like, you know, emphasizing that you had to have your ties tucked in and the girls had to have their hair tied back. Yeah. And you told like a story that pretty much like that. And
I do wonder, because we got a few stories. And I do wonder if that's part of the curriculum, like the teaching.
Yeah, cemetery too. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember our teacher in woodwork was a bit of a bastard. I kind of feel like, I think he was on his way out. He was like the last of that breed. Because he used to have like a long wooden stick. And as we all kind of gathered around to look at what he was teaching us, he'd do that with the stick, sort of like to make sure we're all far enough away from him. And he said, back in the day, he used to just be able to do that. And if anyone got hit, then they were too close.
Good old days.
That was his excuse every time. Why have you hit this kid? He was too close. I was swinging.
He was in the swing zone. So anyway, Gus rips this kid's face off. And I think this is where Gus has gone over the edge. This is where we get like the detective, the James Bond-esque music for a bit here. Bum, 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 bum. It's like hash pipe. Sort of that kind of riff going on, and he chases them in the car towards the potato truck.
This seems a bit like, I don't know. I didn't expect these characters to go out this way. I didn't think it was their time. But yeah, he basically like chases Drew and his mother down in their car and pushes them into a, what kind of truck is it?
Potatoes.
Truck.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's weird. They didn't deserve it, and I don't know, it seems inconsistent again, because he was, like, nice to them before. Well, not the mum, but the kid, and being a kind of better dad than before, and then suddenly it's just, I don't know, would anyone have given a shit if the bully died? Probably not, because he was a dick, but I've got to say, this film doesn't mind killing off kids, which is something most films try and avoid, weirdly. This one just goes wholeheartedly, like, it's a small town. The class size by the end of the movie is probably cut down by half.
Yeah.
But then Gus takes Clyde's body, doesn't he, to the pet cemetery.
I think it would kind of make sense if he took their bodies as well. If he took their bodies as well.
That would make sense, yeah.
Yeah. But he just takes Clyde's.
Yeah. Because he's probably lying. I don't... feeling pretty, I like this newfound freedom I've got of not having a family now, but I do need a little sidekick to do my bidding.
Also, our main character, who's kind of been out of it for a lot of the, it feels like a lot of the film, he is completely changed now. Maybe because he saw Gus save him, he's now like, Gus is on to something. I actually quite like Gus. I'm gonna, reanimate my mother with Gus's help. He's kind of like building he's in the attic and he's building like a makeup thing, and he's playing with dolls and he's making dresses.
I've noticed we've completely forgot about a character as well. There's like a housekeeper / nanny character.
She's only in it in the very first scene, one scene towards the middle, and then at the end, I think.
So
at the end, she's like putting on the dress of Jeff's mum, obviously, and trying to sort of emulate the movie star thing.
Sorry, yeah, because I remember, no, it's just I remember thinking, like, oh, at first, you know, is she going to try and replace the mum or something like that? But then, halfway through the movie, in that like second scene she's in, I'm like, No, they haven't utilized her much at all. That's strange, but I'm sure they'll get it together at the end, and then it's just like, oh, they don't. Okay, cool, that's it.
Yeah, so Jeff is on a U-turn. He's become very creepy very quickly. I don't know where he gets the mum's buddy from. That's kind of brushed.
Doesn't Gus dig it up?
Gus digs it up, and then somebody at the cemetery contacts Chase and says, we just saw Gus digging up your wife's body. And he's like, I'll be right down there to sort it out. The mother doesn't seem to have decomposed at all.
No.
She's been perfectly...
Yeah.
She looks pretty much the same as she did when she's alive.
There's also a scene which I blanked when it was on. I don't really know what's going on. There was a taxidermist. I think he was talking about Church, the cat from the last one. But I think he was only there to sort of add some scenes to Chase. He thought he was a bit of a crazy guy. I think he threw a taxidermied squirrel at the door or something.
I think he's just there yes, the blood was dead, but the animal wasn't.
Yeah.
He's just a bastard for no reason, he seems. He seems to be giving Chase a hard time.
Yeah. Can you imagine just seeing somebody that unhelpful just... Yeah, the blood's dead, the animal's not. Can you expand on that? No.
Okay, well. Sorry, that's it. You have to work everything out outside yourself. So not long after he finds out that Gus exhumed the mum's body, Chase goes to Gus's house to kind of go, what have you done this then? And they have a bit of a showdown. And obviously in the Gilbert house, isn't Gus like cooking something up or something? It's just basically the house just looks like some of that Texas Chainsaw Massacre now.
Yeah.
What's he cooking? What I can't remember. What's he doing?
I think it's something quite raw or zombie-ish.
Yeah, he's just having a load of meat and blood and guts everywhere. He's got a pot noodle on the go as well.
It reminded me of like a Resident Evil 7 just going through that house suddenly.
Yeah, that's true.
I think we kind of... coming towards the culmination of events here, now getting towards the end of the film, we've got the woman housekeeper who wants to be the mum, dressing up as the mum, and then she gets attacked by the reanimated mother character. She gets like stabbed in the eyeball or something.
And is there some nudity in there for no reason? Am I misremembering or wishful thinking or something? I seem there to be remembering at some point in this film.
At some point, someone's nude.
I can't remember. And it's right. It's Chase. It's the
girlfriends are in the room. Pretend you don't remember.
Yeah.
Chase just walks in naked and just goes, "All right then, this is me. Judge me on this."
This came back to life.
Pretty stiff.
So I mean, it's all kicking off now. Chase is. See how he kills the dog. Zowie, he has a scrap with Zowie, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he kills Zowie and Gus like around about the same time.
Blows Gus's head off, brains out or something.
Yeah. So he's trying to shoot him, isn't he? And he's like, only got one in the chamber.
That's right.
And then Gus kind of goes, ha 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 ha. But then, oh no, God, here we go, bang! Got it.
Yeah. And then... the mum's back and they're all happy family, I think. Right? Something happens.
It seems like that's Jeff's intention, that he wants them to be a happy family now. He's like, he's in his little suit, Jeff, for some reason. He looks like a little ventriloquist dummy. And he wants, basically wants everyone to be happy and happy family. He's like hugging his mum. But then Chase is having none of it. He's like, no, this ain't the way it's going down.
There's a fire as well, isn't there?
Yeah, she starts the fire, and then she starts melting instantly. She's like, I probably should have done that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize
it's her own fault, Mum.
Yeah.
I'm not scooping you up and taking you back there.
I don't know why she melts. What is that? Maybe that's why she looks so fresh. She's been, I don't know, turned into plastic or something. Also, the kid comes back as well, and his face is all... messed up. He's got an axe. Kind of a cool looking little villain character.
Has he still got the scarf on? Or is it gone?
Don't remember. I don't remember.
Me neither.
Yeah.
That's it.
But, it ends with, what's her name? She's really hamming it up, the mother character.
Yeah. Like, I think her acting was better when she was trying to be a cheesy movie actress at the start of the film.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
So, and then the heroes get out. Everything's okay. Everything goes back to normal. No one brings it up again. there's no Pet Sematary 3, I don't think, is there?
I don't think so.
There was a bit of a weird thing at the end. I noticed when Renee was like melting, she kept shouting, "Dead is better, dead is better, dead is better." But I thought the whole sort of tagline to this, "Dead is better," was supposed to mean that they're not dead, because Judd in the first film says sometimes dead is better than the undead.
Okay.
But then she's chanting, "Dead is better," but that doesn't make sense in the context of how that's used in the first film.
They've reclaimed that phrase for their people.
reclaimed that, but we've heard it said in derogatory terms towards us. We've reclaimed it. We're using it. There we go. Okay, that clears that up. That makes sense. I was just confused. I was a bit like, what?
Or she had like a deathbed realization. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, you guys are right. I'm glad I'm melting, if anything.
That is better. It is better. But yeah, it's pretty quick sharp that Jeff goes from wanting to make happy families to suddenly being like, oh, actually, maybe that's a bad idea.
Teenager. Up and down, those guys. But I mean, to rate the film, what are you guys going to go for?
Do you want to go first, Ben?
Okay, I'll go first. Despite the fact that it is obviously ridiculous in places, I still like kind of enjoyed it in a weird sort of way. Like it still did fairly entertain me, and it felt like something, as I said, I've never seen this before, and the fact that I've seen the original numerous times, it felt like an interesting spin on that idea, even though it feels a bit B-movie in places and very hammy, but I still kind of enjoyed it. But I wouldn't go any higher than a C, just because I think that's all it deserves.
Yeah. What about you, Jay?
Yeah, I'd probably join you there. I want to see. I think it probably, if it was maybe not done as well, might even in a way get a bit higher, but because it really frustrates me when things are really close to being good rather than just being bad. But yeah, no, I think it had a lot going for it. It was carried, by some of the acting and some of the weird humor. But yeah, I think a C is fair. It's not it doesn't deserve, the first one's rated too low, and so is this one as well.
Yeah, this film scared me as a kid. This time it didn't scare me so much, but I still enjoyed it. It's the kind of a freaky, weird sort of combination of tones and stuff. And it's pretty good. I want to say it's great. I got a C minus. It's fun.
I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think that's fair enough.
We'll buy the soundtrack.
Yeah, soundtrack. So I've got some, not trivia, but I've got a little game I like to call the name game, which is where I describe a film that will have a name very similar to Pet Sematary. So it will rhyme with Pet Sematary. It'll become very obvious very quickly, Jay.
Okay.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Number one, there's a graveyard out behind the house, and Lewis Creed is up to his neck in unpaid loans. Eventually, he discovers that if he buries his unpaid loans out in the graveyard, he can consolidate it into one easily paid monthly payment. What's the film called?
Debt. Cemetery?
Debt Cemetery. it's as clever as that. Number two, the Creed family move into a house and find out that they are never, ever able to leave long French bread on the windowsill because there is a man out back who gobbles them up when they're not looking.
Pret Cemetery?
Oh, close. That would have been better, but it's not that.
Is it Baguette Cemetery?
Baguette Cemetery. Number three.
Pret Cemetery, I feel like, works. I know. Just as well.
Creed family, new house, but little Ellie won't stop banging on her new woodwind instrument, and she's really crap. The daily playing a driving Lewis Crazy, who decides to take the instrument and bury it out in...
I can't think of any woodwind instrument that rhymes with pet.
Yeah, is that recorder cemetery, probably.
Recorder cemetery. Clarinet.
Clarinet cemetery.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Number four.
That's right.
Creed family. New house. Graveyard out back full of razors. And Lewis has very hairy knees. One night, desperation takes him and he goes out and digs out one of the razors from...
Gillette Cemetery.
Gillette Cemetery. Number five, Creed's new house.
I've played this too many times.
And they love the salads, but one day they realize the salads are really boring, actually. So against the neighbor's wishes, they go out and dig up a tiny little bottle to add some flavor to their salads.
Vinaigrette Cemetery.
Mate, you are killing it.
Basically, I think I've just been on the receiving end of this so many times. I'm just attuned to the way Luke thinks.
I think I think you've been practicing every day. You do like a little workout.
I've got one of those things. I've got one rhyme stuck in my head and I can't get rid of it. It's like, is the answer Courgette Cemetery?
Courgette Cemetery. It's the next
one. Been in there. Yeah, that would have been number six. Yeah, okay, well, you both got 5 out of 5. Well done. once again, go follow Jay on Twitter. Jay, what's your Twitter handle?
All my Twitter handles are quite embarrassing on purpose. This one's at JayTheCool.
JayTheCool.
Yeah, it's, I guess, an oxymoron.
I think it suits you. I'm at Luke Wakanda of K. Ben is... At Ben Errington.
At Ben _ Errington, pretty much on everything. Luke, haven't you just released a book as well about podcasts?
Yeah. 1 to 5 million podcast, what's it called? 1 to 5 million lessons learned from podcasting in my pants when nobody was looking. It's a new book I've got out. It's available on Amazon. And it's about podcasting. Go check it out. But also go check out Jay's book, Sequel Land.
Yes, indeed.
Buy them both in one amazing shop.
Yeah, sounds good. So if you enjoyed today's episode, become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovac Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider rating and reviewing. And remember to join the Facebook group Horror Hangout Board of Advisors. Thanks to the listeners if you enjoyed the show. Oh, said that a bit. Thanks to my co-host Ben for being a right horror dude. And thanks once again to Jay. Thanks, man.
Cheers, thank you for having me.
Cool. Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Luke.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.